Tony Snow. Welcome. It's good to have you here, sir.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Where do we want to start with this? Just quickly, you've been on the job now for a few months. Is it everything you dreamed and more?
You know, it's interesting. I hadn't even the thing about this job is I didn't have a whole lot of expectations. It was something sort of new and different. But it surprised me in two ways. Number one, it is more fun than I've ever had in my life.
Really?
I love it. And the second thing is that, you know, I worked in the first Bush White House, Mike, and
yes,
there's a lot of backstabbing there. This is probably the most friendly, collegial workplace I've ever been in. So it's a real pleasure to be working there, too.
Well, that's fantastic.
And yeah.
I enjoy your interactions with the press when I get to see them. do they appreciate, do you believe your, I guess, your level of candor?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, it's a lot better to have somebody either say I'm not going to answer the question rather than sort of waste everybody's time by talking in circles. And at the same time, what I do is I spend a fair amount of time talking to reporters saying, okay, what do you need? Because one of the selling points for me come to this White House is we got a good story to tell, and we're probably going to do better by getting out more information rather than less.
Sure.
And that's kind of what I'm doing right now, is trying to make sure that I get more information. But either when I can't talk or I don't have anything to say, I'm not going to waste their time and mine by getting up and tap dancing. I'm not very good at it.
Right. Getting to some, I guess, in a roundabout way, policy issues. We have, of course, the situation right now between Israel and Hezbollah. Do you get the impression that Hezbollah has more media savvy, or perhaps some Arab organizations in general have more media savvy than they used to have, and do you believe that they're winning in some ways the battle in the media?
Well, I think that they certainly have some media savvy. I don't know if it's legitimate or not, but you know, some of the blogs have been carrying business cards from somebody who does PR for Hezbollah. But it's pretty clear that they've been trying to manipulate images and pictures, and in many cases, reporters have gone along with that. On the other hand, I think as people begin to take a longer view of what's going on, then they realize that there's a difference between people who do deliberately lob bombs into civilian areas just hoping to kill somebody.
Correct.
And those who are trying to take out rocket launching sites. I think the PR advantage, at least here in the United States, withers away pretty quickly.
One comparison that I kind of make as far as the number of civilians being killed on the southern Lebanon side of the border. In this country, if you have something coming along like Katrina and people don't get out of the way because they were too poor or couldn't go or whatever, we tend to hold the controlling government responsible for the fact that they were left behind, i.e.
Right.
The White House. I don't see anybody really making the point that Hezbollah controlled this region, knew the bombs were coming, and did not get these civilians who could have been too poor, invalid, or whatever out of the way. They don't seem to be held to the fire, the feet held to the fire the way governments are here.
Well, there's number one, it's not a full it's not a full legitimate government.
Right.
It is a government.
But they control the region and they have lots of money.
And here's the key: they've always held people as human shields.
Yeah.
I mean, they deliberately put these things in people's houses. I don't know if you saw the shot a couple of days ago, but the Israelis actually had video of a guy going in and shooting rockets out of somebody's house.
Yes.
They put radar sites on houses. They fire rockets from houses. Now, what the Israelis have been doing, both in Lebanon and in Gaza, is that they've not only been distributing leaflets, but I think you may have heard the story in Gaza a couple of days ago, where they kept calling this, you know, they told a family, get out of the house, we're going to bomb it, it's got bad guys in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the family left except for one old man, and they kept calling him till 2 in the morning. He finally left, and they bombed it. I mean, I guarantee you Hezbollah is not calling around saying, okay, we're about to bomb, everybody get out of the way, because their explicit aim is to kill civilians, whereas the Israelis seem to be taking pains.
Well, I guess there's no one they can call if they don't know where the rocket's going to come down in the first place.
Yes, exactly. But the point is, they basically are holding civilians hostage both in Lebanon and in Israel, and that's their tactic. The tactic of terror is to make people fear for their lives and hope that being fearful will make them say, okay, well, maybe if I just surrender, the bad stuff will go away and I won't have to fear anymore. But of course, as people have learned over the years, the moment you surrender to terror, what do you get? You get worse terror, and you get it on a permanent basis.
Update me on the standoff quickly. I mean, the last I knew, basically, Israel said ceasefire is okay if we can stay there till international troops come. Lebanon says ceasefire is okay if they get out of the way until leave the country until international troops come. Would it be impossible for the Lebanese army, as we know it, to go south at the same time Israel remains there until international troops come.
Yeah, that's something they're going to have to be working out. What's going on today? There's a lot of stuff going on at the UN, and part of that is trying to figure out how you let the Lebanese government reclaim control of southern Lebanon and not allow Hezbollah to stay in place and to continue to run things. So you're going to have the head of the Arab League, you're going to have two foreign ministers, one from Qatar and one from the United Arab Emirates. They're going to talk to the Security Council today. The Security Council will meet, and my guess is that they're going to be, at least a day and maybe more. They're pretty hard negotiations. The Israelis have said that they're willing to leave if you get an international force in. Their major concern is that Hezbollah not regroup and become
right.
an even more formidable terror force. The United States, the European Union, we all agree. So, and I think probably a lot of the Arab nations in the neighborhood agree secretly or less so. So I think the real key now is to put in a government that actually runs things and not one that simply looks the other way while Hezbollah gains strength again.
All right. Touching something domestically in a little bit, limited amount of time we have, the president is still pushing for a guest worker program when it comes to the immigrants. This is
yeah.
an area where I think the president is a bit dreamy. Is it realistic to assume that people who are here illegally will simply gladly become part of a guest worker program, which would probably entail losing the job they have now? I mean, the illegals here are too entrenched to switch to a new
okay.
game, would be my point. Would you agree?
Well, except if the program were that dopey, it wouldn't work.
Give me the non-dopey
part. That's
not
how the program works. The idea, there are several pieces in play at the same time. Number one, this whole notion of a secure, tamper-proof biometric ID, very important, because you got to be able to figure out who these people are, and you also have to deny employers the opportunity to say, well, golly, that ID card that he got at the 7-Eleven sure did look realistic.
Right.
So you've got to have an ID that not only identifies people beyond a shadow of a doubt, but also denies employers any cover if they're knowingly hiring illegals. The second thing is, then you get to the point, if they don't have the ID, guess what? They leave. They get deported. The third piece in that is that part of the guest worker program is employers have to say, I want this employee. If you got somebody who's working someplace now, they've been there for 4 or 5 years, my guess is the employer is going to say, I want that person. And they're going to have to be able to document that they don't have a long list of Americans waiting for the job. So all of those pieces are part of the guest worker program.
Well, so those who are unwanted, they're going to pack up and go home? They'll just slip
no, no,
in?
No.
Right. Whoa.
I mean, there are all sorts of proposals about what happens, but under the guest worker program, you got to get yourself identified. It doesn't mean that you pack up and go home, but it does mean that at some point, if you want to become a U.S. citizen, then you go to the back of the citizenship line. You got fines and taxes to pay and a whole series of other things to go on. In some cases, we're talking about a path to citizenship that could go on as long as 17 years. So it's not like people are getting sort of a free pass and getting waved through like they did in 1986. So the temporary worker program also is designed to deal with people. And you see a lot of this, certainly in agricultural areas, where what happens is they come in and they work seasonally. You know,
right.
they go up and pick stuff in Washington State, and then they head back to Mexico. In those particular cases, you'd also have a pretty routine system where people would have to check in, check out, and get out. So,
just the last question. We have
yeah.
let's say we have drywallers. They're Mexicans. They do drywall. This employer has to now prove he can't find any Americans who want to do drywall. Now
right.
Some say they do. What happens to those drywalling Mexicans?
What happens
Americans want the job. Now, what do we do with those Mexicans?
Well, the question, then you got to figure out several things. Do they want to go ahead and sign up for the temporary guest worker program? Have they already signed? Do they have green cards? The problem you have here, Mike, is you got also a bunch of other questions that are going to be in play. Do they have green cards?
Right.
Have they tried to get themselves in the citizenship line? Are they here illegally? I mean, frankly, if there's no job for them and they're here illegally, you know, they're going to get the boot, and that's, you're right. The question is, why would they sign up for the ID? The answer is, you know what? You don't have the ID, you're going to go anyway.
All right. Our time is limited. I have no time for a call, but somebody on hold wants to know what it's like dealing with Helen Thomas, so I'll ask you quickly.
Look, I've been dealing with Helen for years. I actually kind of enjoy it. You know, it's fun. I like dealing with the members of the press since I've been in the press for 28 years. It's not like I'm dealing with a bunch of strangers or I don't know what people want. And I hope it shows, but I'm having a blast doing the briefings.
Yeah, no, I enjoy your style. It's refreshing, and I appreciate you taking a little time out for me today.
Great. Well, congratulations, and let's talk again.
Tony, I'll make a plan, too. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mike.
See you. You betcha.